was a big chunk of the course. And this afternoon you're going to do some homework on extra dimensions, so tutorials, and then the homework this week is about the split supersymmetry. An interesting proposal of supersymmetry. Okay. One thing I want to talk about a little bit before moving into extra dimensions is I can see that right now you must be a little bit tired for sure, confused, and so you're like a little bit confused about supersymmetry because it's pretty complicated. The simplest things don't work, so we have to extend supersymmetry. It's also a little bit disappointing, right? Because you hear about these beautiful ideas, such as let's expand the Poincaré symmetry of space-time to something bigger, supersymmetry. Great. And then you try to explain all the existing data, and then you run into trouble. So it's kind of disappointing that all these beautiful ideas, when you test them against what we know so far, are not working very well. So one thing I want to remind you is that beyond the standard model is the frontier. It's the frontier of our understanding of particle physics. This is the ground where we are testing these new ideas. So when you are living in the frontier, life is rough. I mean, it's no surprise. You are confused, there is a lot of trial and error. So far, you've seen only trial and error. And there is a lot of disappointment because the things don't work on the first try. But don't be discouraged because it is normal. Interesting areas of physics are always areas that are messy and complicated. And once you solve the problem you are trying to solve, in hindsight you realize that things are simpler than you thought before. So I will take the complications you've seen in supersymmetry not as a drawback of supersymmetry, but as an indication that if supersymmetry is out there, there are some things that we need to understand better. It's not a disappointment, it's a challenge, I would say. Okay? And I'm going to behave as an old fart, and I'm going to tell you a story that Shelley Glashow told me. Glashow is one of the standard model proponents. And he said that before the results from Gargamel, these results finally showed that the standard model was the right proposal, he and his friends had taken a notepad, and in each page they were writing down all the possibilities, all the possible models that explain the existing data. So they had all these notepads with different models, and as soon as more data was coming in, they were revisiting each model, and when it wasn't working, they were tearing off the page, one less model, and so on and so forth. And at the end of the day, only the standard model was there, surviving. So we are in the same situation right now. We are exploring different models. They seem contrived, they seem complicated, but we need more data to go ahead. We need more data. And then everything will be clear. And then we will understand that we were stupid and the solution was right there. So don't be disappointed, because in messy waters is where you collect the best results in physics. I'm sure when you went to your first class of quantum mechanics, it was beautifully explained, everything was clear, wow. Why? Because nobody is working on foundations of quantum mechanics. Because this is clear, this is not an area to do research. We are talking about areas of research and it is complicated. Okay, comments. Just to give you, heads up, it's not so bad. So let's move into models of extra dimensions. So when we talk about SUSY, we were trying to expand the symmetries of the space-time. So we are trying to see if there were any extensions of the Poincaré algebra. Whereas in extra dimensions, like SUSY, extra dimensions is just simply saying, okay, we are going to expand the space-time dimension. So why not? Why do we live in four dimensions instead of ten, as string theory predicts? So string theory predicts that there is 10 dimensions, and we need to get rid of 6 of them, right? So why are we living in four dimensions is one of the questions that the models of extra dimensions are trying to answer. So once you expand the number of dimensions of the space-time, there are new phenomena and mechanisms that show up. You, for example, can modify the early cosmology. There are many things that come out working on extra dimensions, but in this course we care about the LHC, about the Lezovik scale. So one thing that the extra dimensions are able to provide is new mechanisms to protect the Higgs. Or to protect the Lezovik scale. Alright. What are these mechanisms? Well, you remember one of the problems of stabilizing the Lezovik scale is that the Lezovik scale, the mass of the Z, for example, is much, much smaller than the Planck mass. So you expected your quantum field theory with a Higgs to be valid up to the Planck scale, well, so you run into trouble. So one possible solution for this model, for this problem is to say that actually M Planck is of order the Lezovik scale. So you thought you have very different scales, the Lezovik and the Planck scale, but actually you are just fooling yourself. The fundamental Planck scale is actually a Lezovik size. And we are going to see how that comes out in extra dimensions. Right. So the second way you can help on stabilizing the Lezovik scale is by putting the Higgs, which is a scalar, to be included into a higher dimensional gauge boson. Imagine I have a gauge boson in 5 or 6 dimensions. This guy will have 4 components plus the 5th or 6 dimensions. So if I identify the Higgs as more or less this extra component, there is something interesting going on. The gauge invariance in 5 dimensions, when you compactify the extra dimensions, lead to gauge invariance in 4 dimensions, plus a lot of shift symmetries for the extra components. So when you compactify from, let's say, 5 or 6 dimensions to 4, of course you want to recover the gauge invariance in 4 dimensions, the thing we want to recover for sure, but there is an extra protection. These extra components, instead of being random, are actually protected by a shift symmetry. So how would you call to a guy protected by a shift symmetry? So we did a tutorial last week, Thursday.
Oh, Goldstone.
Goldstone, yes. So, very good. So, a guy that is protected by a shift symmetry is a Goldstone boson. So, the Higgs in extra dimensions, you can put the Higgs as the extra dimensional component of your gauge field, and then it is a Goldstone boson. From the 4D point of view.
What's the thing that's breaking the symmetry now?
So you have to compactify, like if you go from 5 to 4, you have to compactify one extra dimension. That breaks the fully 5 dimensional gauge invariance, but it preserves this shift symmetry. And we'll see that.
So yeah. I don't really understand what you mean by compactify.
Yes, okay. So imagine, so we know we live in 4 dimensions, right? And we know these 4 dimensions are actually the sitter. They are very close to Minkowski by the sitter, the space. and we live in our visible universe, which is pretty large, right? And we know this very well. So when we look at, for example, Newton's law, we look how two masses attract each other. We look at the potential as a function of the distance goes as 1 over r, inverse of the distance. This is a prediction of four dimensions, we are going to see them, and not of any other type of dimension, any number of dimensions. So by looking at how gravity works in four dimensions, you can set bounds on extra dimensions. So there are other dimensions out there that should be very, very small, so that the effects that are pushing this potential from being, you know, you have 1 over r plus 1 over 1 over r to the n correction, because you have extra dimensions. These effects of extra dimensions are going to be reduced because the extra dimensions are small. Or in other words, sorry, we see our world, we know for sure it's very four dimensional, so if there is any extra dimensions, they should be very small, such that the effects of these extra dimensions are suppressed, and we don't see this diversion. Deviations from 4D.
The text is something that's sort of been bothering me about this whole many dimensions thing. What exactly does it mean for a dimension to be small? Is that just synonymous with it not with the effect being suppressed, or just a way of visualizing it?
No, it is the first thing you said. It is small because the effects should be suppressed. We measure. We haven't seen any extra dimensions so far, so there are bounds on the size of these extra dimensions. We are going to see how that comes up. Yeah, so somehow, when you define a theory in multi-dimensions, you have to provide a mechanism for compactification, meaning that instead of having an infinite size or a very big size extra dimension, it should be very tiny, so that the effects of this extra dimension are suppressed by the size of the extra dimension. So we need to compactify them, and that's what leads to all trouble in string theory, actually. Yeah. All right. So, same in this case, even if you start with a cage field in five dimensions, you know for sure you have to compactify one of them and recover the gauge invariance in four dimensions. What is nice is that even when you do that, there is a remaining symmetry, the shift symmetry for the fifth component. So the Higgs in extra dimensions can behave as a Boston boson.
So yeah, the point is that low energies at long distances, you want things to look four-dimensional, effectively four-dimensional. Mm-hmm. But at high energies and short distances, you know, our experiments haven't actually probed that. So we don't actually know, it could potentially be higher dimensional.
Right, so we are going to see what are the sources of constraints for extra dimensions. Okay, so this is two ways in which working on extra dimensions may be interesting for the electric physics. The third way, the one I like the best, but that's a personal view, is that the extra dimension is just a tool, a mathematical tool, and it's not real. So you can use extra dimensions as to describe the Higgs as a composite. A composite of a strong interaction. So we talked about how the all this problem with the hierarchy problem goes away as a strong coupling. There is no hierarchy problem. Yes?
You don't mean the strong interactions, you mean some strong... That's not color.
Of a strong interaction, but not a shift system, so new strong interactions. Yeah. So when we think on the Higgs, as a bound state, so if the Higgs is a bound state, or for example fermions, then there is no hierarchy problem, right? It's just that I'm trying to describe the Higgs as a scalar theory, but at high energy this scalar is going to break down into fermions, and then I don't have any problem. So that's one way you can use extra dimensions. So this is a holographic approach. to extra dimensions, and if we have time, we'll do that. And this is based in ideas such as the cyber duality in supersymmetry or the ABS CFT in string theory. Right? So the idea is that I want to describe a four-dimensional theory of strongly interacting fields, but instead of describing this theory, I'm going to describe a 5D high-dimensional theory of bound states that are really coupled to each other. And that's why we call it holographic, because instead of talking about a four-dimensional theory, you talk about a theory in one more dimension, such as a hologram. Okay, so that's just an overview. We are going to see all of these things. I'm not sure about number three, because maybe we don't have time. Okay, so now we want to describe physics in extra dimensions. And because we are particle physicists and not string theory, so we try to describe these theories using quantum field theory. But then we find a problem. This problem is renormalizability. So theories in extra dimensions are not renormalizable. And I'm going to show you right now. So why are they not renormalizable? So let's start with a theory of a scalar in 4 plus n dimensions. So you would write down my action in 4 plus n is the integral over my regular 4 dimensions plus the n extra dimensions of my Lagrangian that contains my 5D scalars, right? So let's look at these Lagrangians. This is going to be let's look at first the kinetic term, the free theory. So you take the free theory and deduce the dimensions of your field based on the free theory. So what are the mass dimensions of a scalar in four dimensions? Anton?
What's the mass dimension?
Of a scalar in 4D.
In 4D it would be 1.
Yes, perfect. Okay. So a scalar in 4D has 1 as mass dimension. What are the mass dimensions of this element of volume? Yes.
Sorry, what is the index of phi?
So m, instead of doing d mu phi, d mu phi, when mu goes from 0 to 3, now the m runs from 0 to all the dimensions.
Yeah, I was actually asking what's written in the phi.
Okay, I'm just saying that I'm just writing down the kinetic term, so I'm thinking about a free theory for the moment.
This is 5D.
Ah,
this is 5D.
Yeah,
but it's not necessarily
5D. So I'm writing, sure, you're very true. So N plus 4. No, very good, okay. I'm always thinking in 5D. So what are the mass dimensions? So this should be 4 plus N. 4 plus N of this element of volume. So what are the mass dimensions of this?
Probably minus 4 or minus N.
Mm-hmm. Very good. Okay. Right? So what are the mass dimensions of this derivative? It's 1 over dx. One, so we have two of them because it's a square, so plus two. So then we can deduce what are the mass dimensions of the scalar, because what are the dimensions of the action? Still good, yes. So plus twice the dimension of your escape. And you know this is equal to zero. So then you get that the dimensions, there's a reason why I'm doing this, it's not just for fun. It's 1 plus 10 over 2. Yes. So the dimensions of a scalar in 5 dimensions, for example, is 3 halves, the same as a frame. And in 6 dimensions, it's almost. Okay. What am I telling you this is, now we know what is one of the dimensions of the scalar field, let's try to add interactions. Let's say I want to add to this Lagrangian a lambda 5-4. And now this coupling is the coupling in 4 plus 10 dimensions. So what are, let's deduce the dimensions of this. We want to do V for X, V and Z of this term. So the same story, 4 plus N plus, this is going to be 2 plus N, right? 2 plus 2 N. And then the dimensions of the copy. So what are the dimensions of the quartic coupling in regular 4D? Max?
Sorry, is that
me? The dimensions of the quartic coupling in regular 4-dimensional theories, like in the ones we use a bit. Anybody remember or can deduce?
Dimensionless.
Yes, dimensionless. Good. That's why it's renormalizable. So, in 4D, lambda has no mass dimensions. Okay? So then you deduce that the dimensions of the quartic interaction in these extra dimensions are something like minus 10. So the interaction of a scalar field theory in extra dimensions has a term that is mass dependent. And what is worse, it looks like 1 over the mass. It's a negative dimension of mass. So this is bad. And the reason why it's bad is because imagine we want to do any experiment with these particles. For example, we do scattering. A phi guy in 5D goes into a couple of phi. So this guy is going to go at the coupling square. So this theory, for the moment I haven't added any mass. It's a scalar theory, massless, and it just has an interaction term. So I need something to match the dimension, right? What are the dimensions of this guy? Well, so this is 2 minus 2n. So to get something dimensionless, I need to multiply by e to the 2.
You mean the scattered cross section?
Yes, scattered cross section. Yes. Alright? So the problem of having negative mass dimensions is just that when you do any experiment with such theory, you're going to end up with something that diverges at high energies. I'm sorry, this is called non-renormalizability in this case. So this guy goes as lambda e to the n. So the higher I try to prove this theory, well, the stronger the dependence on the energy. And at some point I'm going to violate unitary, as in the case of the lambda with scattering. So having mass negative mass dimensions may destroy the renormalizability of your theory.
So we have, in previous courses we haven't thought about non-renormalizable theories. We say like that's a relevant coupling or an irrelevant coupling.
Yes.
So the point is, Have you got negative mass dimensions, the coupling is relevant, so irrelevant. So low energies is irrelevant, so high energies is very relevant, so it's important.
It means that high energies, so that in, if you try to renormalize this theory, you are going to end up with an infinite number of counterforms. Every time I try to get to higher and higher orders, I need more and more. So it's not a well-behaved theory, such as the standard model, which is renormalized. So we are giving, by using extra-dimensional models, we are giving up something that we thought it was important in the standard model, is to ask for renormalizability. Is that, so let me just add something about gauge interaction. If I go from the derivative to the covariant derivative, then I deduce that the coupling, gauge coupling in in n plus 4 dimensions, has also negative mass dimensions. So the gauge coupling in extra dimensions is also dimensionful, instead of being dimensionless as in this standard model. Okay, so what are you going to do? Many people say, okay, then I don't want to be working on extra dimensions because this is not a non-renormalizable theory. So one attitude is to say, give up this extra dimensional crap, just do regular quantum field theory. So one, the opinions you will find out there are, one, give up. Two, that's okay as long as you do classical field theory. And an example of that is quantum gravity. Why is quantum gravity such a difficult subject? It's because the coupling in gravity is dimensionful. And that makes it very difficult to quantize. And the attitude that most people take, including myself, is this is okay as long as you do an effective field theory. So yes, if you try to describe an extra-dimensional theory using field theory up to arbitrarily highest case, you are going to run up with problems. So what is an effective field theory in this case? To have an effective field theory, you need a small parameter, a function parameter. So in the case of the lambda 5-4 theory, it will be precisely this parameter here. So this guy is dimensionful, this quartic coupling has some dimensions, and as long as this combination is very small, then I'm fine. So if I try to probe the theory or to explain the theory at very, very high energies, I'm going to run into trouble. But as long as I keep my theory at low energies, I should be fine. All these dangerous effects are suppressed by the energy of my what I'm doing physics, divided by whatever the scale is set in this quartic coupling. All right. So, if you say that lambda in your extra dimension is new physics, time scale of new physics, in this case to the minus power of minus n, it can be the compactification scale or the curvature scale, whatever, then this parameter goes as the energy over the scale of new physics to the power of n. So as long as my energy is much below this new physics scale, I should be fine doing effective field theory. And we know that effective field theories are very useful. Well, probably you saw it somewhere, right? They are very useful, so there is nothing to get so worried about. Okay, so how will you write an effective field theory in extra dimensions? What you want to do is to integrate out all the physics that are high energies. So the way you will do is, I have my action in four classes, the element of volume, and my Lagrangian in four classes. That depends on, for example, this extra dimensional field. And as you saw with Ruth, if these extra dimensions are compactified, you can write your extra dimensional field that depends on the four regular extra dimensions and the extra dimensions as a sum over some Kaluza Klein modes. That's, you can do a Kaluza Klein decomposition, right? Okay, so writing the simplest effective field theory for your extra dimensions is simply, the simplest thing you can do is to truncate this sum on the zero mode. So when you compactify a field in the extra dimensions, you will end up with a tower of Kaluza Kleins. When you say I have a very light mode and then I have a tower, n equals 0, n equals 1, n equals 2, and so on and so forth. And the masses of this tower increases with the number, the Kaluza Klein number. So if I want to describe physics at very, very low energies below the first excited state, then I just have to truncate this sum into the zero mode. That's a simple way of doing that. So let's do that. So then you go from your four plus n, it's going to be v for x. Some function of your zero mode of x. And then you can take all the guys that depend on the extra dimension, so the wave function, and then you're going to take a function of this wave function. So I don't know if you know this, this is the KK field. And you will go to this part, the wave function, in the extra dimension. So now, you know how to work out this. You just integrate this guy over the whole extra dimension, and you're going to end up with something that is d for x, and an effective Lagrangian in 4D that just depends on the zero mode. Then you go and make sure that your kinetic term for the zero mode is canonically normalized, and then you see what is the effect of this extra dimension in the interactions and masses. And we are going to do that too. Alright, so what we've seen so far is that extra dimensions are nice, but if we want to approach extra dimensions using field theory and non-string theory, then we need to face the fact that extra dimensions are non-renormalizable. So we need to use an effective field theory description. Okay, so let's start with the first model of extra dimensions that was proposed as a solution for the hierarchy problem. This model is called ADD because it was Arkany, Hamel, Dimopoulos, and Valli. And it's also called, nowadays, large extra dimensional models. So the idea was, okay, so there is a hierarchy problem. And everybody says it is a problem because the scalar corrections, the corrections to the mass of the Higgs goes as the new physics scalar squared. So this in principle could be as large as a Planck scale. Whereas we know that the mass of the Higgs should be of order the electroweak scale because of the electroweak precision test and so on. So, for many years we were posing the question of how to protect these quadratic divergences. Whereas another way of posing the same question is, actually my problem is that I try to imagine nature as having a set of scales, and one of them happens to be very, very large. So I cannot make sense of a theory, scalar theory, that is able to go all the way to the Planck scale. But instead I could be thinking, actually there is nothing that is beyond the electroweak scale, nothing I can understand with quantum field theory. It's just that, why is the Planck scale so large? It's because gravity is very weak. So you can modify the hierarchy problem question by saying it's not about a scalar theory in 4D, it's really about why we have in nature a force that is so weak as compared with electroweak forces. So the solution of these people, and I was very smart, is to say actually, let's say that M Planck is actually of order nz. So my understanding of a scalar theory finishes both at M Planck and MZ. But we know this guy is, the way we measure it, is 10 to the 18 GeV, whereas MZ is order 10 to the 2 GeV. So that idea seems to contradict an experiment. But what the largest dimensional people say is, this M Planck is induced, that this value comes from measuring the gravitational interaction. So this is a gravitational interaction in 4D. Imagine that we live in 4D dimensions, as we measure, as, but, or the standard model, but gravity lives in M plus 4 dimensions. Then when we measure gravitational interactions, because we have to share these interactions with a bunch of extra dimensions, then the effect of gravity seems to be diluted by these extra dimensions. And so we are going to see that explicitly, but the idea of a large extra dimension is that this is the fundamental, the real Planck scale, but this is an induced Planck scale in 4D. This is the value we induce when we look at how gravity interacts. Okay, so let's do that. Let's see how that comes up in extra dimension. How do you obtain the value for M Planck? What you do is to write down the action for gravity. And this is going to go as d for x, dnz. The determinant of your metric, and then you just have the Einstein-Hilbert action. Right? And the way you deduce the Planck is because it appears here, Gn. So let's see in the next dimensions what we get. What are the dimensions of the metric? So think how the metric appears. The simplest thing you can think about is something like this, right? So what are the dimensions of this? The element of this? So L squared, so in minus 2, in mass step. What are the dimensions of this? Same. So what are the dimensions of the metric?
Same.
Zero. Okay, good. But you know, because every time you write the metric, you put 1, minus 1, minus 1, minus 1, and nothing else. Okay. We already say that this guy is minus 4 plus n, right? What are the dimensions of the Ricci scalar? Whichever. So the Ricci is something like this, right? excuse the percentage. And this guy goes as the derivative of the metric square. Derivative of the metric. So the richest killer goes as derivative of the metric square. So what are the dimensions of the richest killer? Good. Last two. Okay. So this guy is dimensionless. How many masses? We have to put a mass scale here. This will be M Planck, the fundamental mass scale. And now we know what is the power of this fundamental Planck scale. So we have to cancel these powers here, and at the end we get M plus 2. Right? Cool. So we have deduced what is the way the Planck, the fundamental Planck scale shows up in a theory of gravity in more than four dimensions. And we are going to use that. Okay. So this is my theory of gravity in extra dimensions. And now I want to deduce how it looks in 4D. Now what I will do is I will integrate over these extra dimensions, and I will end up with d4x, the richest scalar in 4D, square root of g in 4D. And then what I've done is to get out this guy, M Planck to M Planck 2, and integrate it over this volume. So it's the volume in this n extra dimensions. I just want you to follow the dimensions, that's it. So this is what you will call M Planck in 4D square. So when you measure gravity from your four-dimensional point of view, what you deduce is the Planck scale is actually a combination of the real, the fundamental Planck scale, and some volume in extra dimensions. This is what I meant when I say there is some dilution. The effect of gravity is diluted in the extra dimension. The dilution comes from this volume factor. So now M Planck in 4D goes as the fundamental Planck scale in multiplied by the volume of the extra dimensional space. So the solution of Arkani Hamel, Dani, and Dimopoulos was to say, okay, so I know how much is this. This is 10 to the 18 GeV's. I know that I want this to be order electroweak scale, so TeV. So I need a large volume. Imagine that these extra dimensions are all a circle of the same radius. It's just an assumption. So the volume in an extra dimension goes at the radius, convertification radius of the extra dimension to the n. So at the end we get something like M Planck to the fourth goes as square in 4D, goes as the fundamental Planck scale to M plus 2 R to the n. So let's plug numbers. If n is equals 1, only one extra dimension, flat, circular extra dimension, then I'm going to get that the radius that plays the game of pushing the four-dimensional Planck scale to 10 to the 18 GeV, where the fundamental is just TeV, is of order 10 to the 13 centimeters. That's huge. We would have seen that So this is not the solution. Whereas if n is equals 2, just increasing one more the number of extra dimensions, it gives you that r is of order millimeter. So if you have more than one extra dimension, large of order millimeter, then you are able to play this game. So is that possible to have a millimeter extra dimension? We have tested gravity with this tabletop experiment, just looking at two balls and seeing how they attract each other, and they are tested at the order of the millimeter. So we don't see any deviations from the typical Newtonian potential up to the millimeter scale. So this is still allowed, but it's really borderline. So yeah, n equals 2 is possible. Two extra dimensions at the millimeter scale is still possible. But what about the standard model? We have tested the standard model to very high energies. What energies?
TeV.
TeV, right? So we tested it to the order of TeV. And when you want to do the conversion from energy to distance, you just remember what is the value of HRC. You know, this is 1 in natural units, and this is 0.2 GeV per femtometer. So you can deduce that the TeV means precisely 10 to the minus 13. All right, what it means is that we haven't seen any effect of extra dimensions up to this scale. So that we, the standard model, cannot live in extra dimensions. Whereas gravity can propagate in the extra dimensions as long as the extra dimensions are not bigger than the millimeter.
How would we mention the four dimensions of gravity at a millimeter scale? What sort of experiment?
So the way you measure this is using tabletop experiments. You have a very precise, yes, and look how they attract each other as you vary the distance. So if you have extra dimensions, you will expect a deformation from the typical Newtonian potential, and then you can bound your extra dimensions. So to that scale, millimeter, without that millimeter, we don't know anything. Our tabletop experiments are not precise enough. So the large extra dimension people play with that game. The game that gravity has been tested to scales that are much, much bigger than the standard model scales. We are much more precise in this area than in this area. So we do need to live in four dimensions or have extra dimensions that are as small as 10 to the minus 13 meters. But gravity can live in n plus 4 dimensions, as long as the radius of these extra dimensions is smaller than millimeter. And if that's the case, and it's 10 millimeter, then you get this in fundamental Planck scale to be of order TeV. So, yes, Anton.
Well, if the standard model has to live in four dimensions, is the Higgs allowed to live in those n dimensions?
It has to, well, we haven't measured Higgs, but if the Higgs lived in millimeter scale extra dimensions, we would have seen the Kerr-Shackling excitations already.
But then why do we even bother with the extra dimensions if the Higgs can't live in it?
The problem is that we want to describe a scalar field in four dimensions, the Higgs. And if this scalar field is valid, this theory is valid up to the Planck scale, we are in trouble. So the large extra dimensional people say, you are not in trouble. Why? Because when you try to explain the scalar field up to the N Planck is actually TeV. So if your fundamental scale is TeV, your radiative corrections are TeV. So it makes sense that the scale, the Higgs is already TeV.
Okay. What if you go above the Planck scale then?
This is the what I find stupid in all this game is like, okay, about the TEV, I cannot say anything. Because gravity becomes quantum, I had to take into account quantum gravity effect, so I just give up. So that's one problem, yes.
Why don't we just put a third extra dimension and then we're not having the crap of putting gravity into our model in different dimensions?
So gravity, what is gravity? Gravity is gravity. So there is a real extra dimension, gravity will be there because it's the description of space-time. So again, we cannot... We cannot just decide that the graviton lives in four dimensions and there are already dimensions. Because how do you define a dimension? It's the space-time. So gravity propagates in the space-time.
Yeah, but here we see gravity in some model live a different number of dimensions.
Yes. So gravity lives in the four dimensions, our four dimensions, and the extra dimensions. There is no way around that, because gravity lives in every dimension.
But if we just put a third dimension, then it goes over the TEV scale, so we can see that some model also live in n+4 dimensions.
So if the standard model lives in n+4 dimensions, you mean that I could put 3 and then r will be of order 10 to the minus 13?
Yeah.
Yes, I could do that. Yes.
So why not?
Yes, I can do that too. So, but I'm just describing the proposal of these people. So the proposal of these people was to say, at least I need 2 extra dimensions. I need them to order millimeter. And they took it as a plus, a bonus. It means that we are going to be able to see this Newtonian potential to be extra dimensional at the millimeter scale. So they took it as a bonus. So there are several things that are kind of tricky in this. So what you say, what about at the TEV scale, at the Planck scale? We have no clue. So at the TEV scale we know that gravity becomes strong as the other interactions. So we could be producing black holes. There is quantum gravity going on, we have no proof, right? So the large extra dimensional people took it as a bonus saying it's not horrible that our understanding ends up at the TEV scale. It means that we will be opening a new area of physics. We will be producing black holes at the LHC as well.
Publicity-wise,
yeah. The other tricky thing is that so, they say, this was much bigger than the electroweak scale, and that was a problem. So that was a fine-tuning problem. Now I'm saying that this is much bigger than the electroweak scale. This is the electroweak scale, so I need a large volume. So I am somehow moving the problem of fine-tuning from the weak to the electroweak to the Planck scale to the fine-tuning of why I need such a large volume. So you need to explain that too. So this theory is not, it has its own problems. But it has very definite predictions. The prediction is that at the TEV scale, at the scale we are going to be reaching now, we will completely lose understanding based on quantum field theory. We will produce black holes, we will see TEV quantum effects of gravity, and all kinds of funny things. Okay. So, what are the predictions? You need more than one extra dimension. So, n is bigger or equal than 2, and maybe the table of experiments will see some signal of extra dimensions. So that's one prediction. Second prediction is that gravity becomes strong at the TEV scale. So we had to face things like how to deal with quantum gravity and how to deal with the formation of black holes at the TEV scale. Other predictions in terms of collider signatures is, well, so my standard model fields are living in four dimensions. They are bound to be in four dimensions, and when I do my LHC experiment in 4D, if I have enough energy accumulated here, I will be able to escape into the extra dimension. So you collide a PP, two protons, and then you produce some guy that goes into the extra dimension. How do you think it looks from the four dimensional point of view? Exactly. That's what they call missing energy. So there will be a lot of missing energy signatures. Yes? So, it's like, imagine there is a dot here, and there is the extra dimension. I need a very nice microscope that enters, like, is able to magnify this dot. The same for looking into the extra dimensions. How do I see that there are extra dimensions? It's because I'm going to be able to produce the Kaluza-Klein excitations. I should be able to look at energies that are order or bigger than 1 over the radius of the extra dimension. So when I look from low energies and from very far, I don't see any extra dimensions. I really need to do high energy experiments or very close, very small distances to see the effect of the extra dimensions.
Okay, can I ask something else? So when we're talking about these extra dimension models, are we assuming that we all approximately live in the same like type of plane? So it's like the coordinates in the x dimension is in the x dimension is the same as yours?
We are assuming that. But you don't worry, by the end of the next week there will be anything on the table. Any model that does anything. And that is when in the x dimension. Yes.
How would you measure gravity
on a TV scale? So, what you will expect, if gravity becomes strong at the TV scale, it starts to produce something, like the two protons produce so much energy that you can form a black hole. Or you produce gravitons, Kaluza-Klein gravitons, the excitations of the extra dimension. And in general, is that you would try to reproduce this cross section, and you will realize that there is something weird going on because this cross section is affected by quantum gravity corrections. So your prediction from quantum field theory won't be correct at the TV scale because there you should take into account quantum gravity. So if it happens, it's going to be fun.
well, if you lose energy into the extra dimension, yes. Or if it's a small extra, a small rolled up dimension, can't it just loop around and come back?
Yes, yes, and in fact that was one of the cutest signatures for large extra dimensions. Like you go back and then puff, appear again, kind of firing again and again.
But what would you see? Like,
so we will see that we produce, how do I explain without entering into details? You know that there are collisions every 500 nanoseconds or so. So if you produce a particle that enters into the extra dimension, if it's able to curl and come back before the next collision, then you will see a displaced vertex. So you produce this a particle, runs into the extra dimension, and then it comes back.
Okay.
But in the meantime, so if I look at my detector, this is the interaction point, and the moment where this guy comes up, the location can be a little bit displaced from the interaction point. So what you will expect in these large dimensions is what they call a displaced vertex. So the interaction happens at some point, and then suddenly, without even knowing why, there is another guy coming up. A little bit displaced.
Okay, but I thought we just said that the standard model lives in the four dimensions that we
yes.
see. So how can some particle go into the extra dimensions and then come back out?
That depends on how you describe the localization of standard model fields in four dimensions. So, and there are many theories. The one these guys were using is assume there is some kind of brain in the extra dimensions, so you can take, grab things off the brain, and then they will come back. But another way will be, okay, see, the standard model fields are really localized in 4D and there is no way of getting them out. They could produce gravitons, they go into the extra dimension, they come back, and then they do something, interact with you again.
Okay, but, sorry.
Yes.
Wouldn't we have seen it already if we had probed distances smaller than the millimeter scale with collider experiment?
But the, what matters is that we are probing at distances the millimeter scale using gravity only. So we are not probing gravity, it's not exactly the same probing gravity at the millimeter scale at low energies, but looking at gravity at the TeV scale. Dimensionally, it looks the same, but it's not the same physics. Okay, so among some missing energies in nature, black holes, which means you produce a black hole, and you believe in Hawking, it evaporates, so it means you produce something, you see nothing, and then, like, explosion of particles, high multiplicity, final states. Great. That's very nice, experimentalists must love it. And that's it. There are no more important consequences for large extra dimensions. So there are searchers for large extra dimensions and bounds on possible production of black holes. And you probably heard about this polemic about producing black holes at the LHC and how they went out and bounded the production of black holes and they evaporated. Okay, so let's start again. If black holes are produced at the LHC, there will be no trouble as long as you believe Hawking. Hawking says they are going to evaporate, so we are fine. But if Hawking is wrong and then black holes do not evaporate, if we produce one, we are kind of screwed for it, right? So what the people at CERN did is to say, okay, imagine that there is no black hole evaporation. Hawking is completely wrong. How can we make sure that these black holes are not going to be produced? Well, the way you measure is look at the cosmic rays. You know that we are continuously attacked by cosmic rays. These cosmic rays have very, very high energies, much more than anything we are going to reach ever. And using this data and how long the universe has been so far, we can be very sure that the black holes, if they are produced at the LHC, will evaporate. So that was one way these people make sure that we don't destroy the world. Okay? See you. See you in the tutorial. Any questions? I know that you're going to have fun with this.